Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
This is Charlotte, and you're watching Going In Raw. That sounds terrible.
What's up? This is the most must-see WWE superstar of all time and his lovely, gorgeous wife,
Marie.
And you are Going In Raw.
What's up? It's your girl, Sasha Banks, the legit boss, and you are watching Going In Raw.
Oh, baby, I like it raw. Oh, baby, I like it raw. And you are tuned in to Going In Raw right now. How you doing?
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw View. We don't have a name for this. We're not going to get a name.
I feel like that's the unofficial title.
I love every single one. And I know somebody out there. I'll have to look it up on the Twitter. I think somebody out there originally pitched Going In Raw View. I didn't just make it up myself. I kind of made it seem like that last week, but I'm pretty sure I took it from somebody. So I'm going to give them their credit at some point. Anyway, this is the show here at youtube.com/Steven Larson, where we review old stuff. Why are you looking at me?
I'm looking at your shirt that literally just came in the mail.
Why would you say something like that?
So I'm just looking at it.
It kills my cool. Like, who just, like...
No, it doesn't kill your cool. You were so excited to wear your awesome shirt that you took it out of the package and put it right on.
I'm a big fan of Pete Dunne.
That's what he does. That doesn't make you nerdy.
Mark, I like Mark Andrews, too. Now, it's a good-looking shirt.
Right? It is a great-looking shirt.
I might try to rip off the color scheme. This is a great color scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, people want to know what color the Cruiserweight Classic should be. Black, yellow, and maroon. Burgundy.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between burgundy and maroon?
I think burgundy might be a little more purple.
Oh, interesting.
Because like burgundy wine. Mm-hmm. The burgundy region.
This show is available at youtube.com/Steven Larson. Be sure to hit the subscribe button. Make sure you get notified whenever new Going In Raw content goes live. You can also find us at the Patreon and patreon.com/Steven Larson. Right now is a great time to support creators, Larson.
It is.
Patreon's a great way to do that.
Okay.
We have many, many wonderful reward tiers. You can be one of those reward tiers, too. I don't think that makes any sense.
Makes zero sense.
No. We're also available at Going In Raw Pro Wrestling Tees. ProWrestlingTees.com/Going In Raw.
This will be an interesting episode.
You can't find this shirt there. This is only available, I think, at Pete Dunne's Big Cartel shop.
It is not. He has currently no t-shirts. As of today, Thursday, he has no t-shirts right now in his shop. But he said next week, more to come.
I wonder if this is available at Mark Andrews. This might be sold out. They made this exclusively for me.
That is not true.
For Steve at Going In Raw. We really like you, Steve. We're going to send you our shit. Thanks, Pete Dunne. Anyways, let's get on with this, man. This week we decided we decided to do Halloween Havoc 1992.
Yeah,
for nobody. Like, we like finding the weirdest.
Well, I found
whatever pay per view we think is going to confuse us most.
I found a list of interesting. Mm-hmm. WCW pay-per-views somewhere on Reddit.
Yeah.
And there's like a dozen of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones.
And so I sent that list to you.
Yeah.
And we looked them over.
Mm-hmm.
And it was down to this one, and I think...
Bash of the Beach 94.
Yeah.
Which was, I think was Hogan's WCW debut pay-per-view.
It was going to be one of these two.
Yeah.
In the end, we went with Halloween Havoc 92.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with a Halloween Havoc.
They're and then we saw the poster. Weird.
The poster to this is great.
I know.
Because it's Sting being attacked by snakes.
That's kind of your worst nightmare if you were in Sting's
place.
Oh,
for sure, yeah.
Because Steve doesn't like snakes.
If that was Steve here and not Steve Borden,
yes.
Then it would have been, it's terrifying. But it's really well done poster.
It is.
It's like, he's there like, and they had a lot of really good posters back then.
They did.
So 92, weird again. WCW is just weird. There was so much weird that happened there. It really was just like, I had to look up in this.
Hold on. Before you continue, I want to ask you one question.
Hmm.
If this didn't specify the show took place in 1992, what year would you think it took place in? Based on the wrestling, based on how the show was photographed, shot.
Oh, 1982. 1982.
And the wrestling itself, yes.
Yeah, WCW is always 10 years behind the times.
But then you go to Halloween Havoc 94, and it suddenly feels like you're 1996, doesn't it?
I didn't see any of Halloween Havoc 94.
Oh, sorry, 93. That's the one with Vader and Cactus Jack. They're,
Oh, yeah. They got like a crane.
Yeah.
And they got like multiple
cameras.
Suddenly,
it's been a year.
And
it's like they leapt forward 3 years.
Maybe there was a change of the helm. You know what
is
might.
Is that when Ted Turner bought it?
Maybe. You know what might explain it? Because there was still the weird situation of. Okay, so there was the NWA World Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah.
And then there was also the WCW
Championship. Yeah, this Ric Flair, this show happened when Ric Flair was in WWF.
Oh, yeah.
And WCW didn't leave the NWA for another year or so.
Oh.
And so when
that wasn't until 93? I thought that was 91.
I think it was just kind of like a drawn-out process.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And so I believe Flair went to WWF with probably the old NWA World title.
Okay, that sounds right.
And so they created a new one.
Yeah.
You know, which we know now or was as a WWE World Heavyweight Championship.
The big gold belt.
Yeah. And so when WCW left the NWA, Ric Flair had that belt.
Mm-hmm.
And so they renamed that the WCW International World Championship.
That only lasted for like 2 years.
And then
years.
They merged the belts.
Okay.
A year or so later.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
I looked into that too.
So the one that was fought, wait, did Sting have? No, what did Ron Simmons have?
He had the WCW World title.
That was the WCW World title, but then Masaccio had
the NWA title.
The NWA title. Okay. All right.
I know it's confusing because when we watch wrestling a lot in the mid-90s, what was the NWA title here was the WCW title.
Right, exactly.
So I can understand the confusion. So I saw that Chono was wearing that belt. I was like,
very weird.
I didn't know that was the NWA belt for a while.
That's weird. There's all sorts of weird in this. WCW, I'm trying to think of a good metaphor here. WCW, because I had to look up, why was Rick Rude there? Why was Jake the Snake there? And it was always, I mean, if you weren't like raised in the NWA, like Sting is like an NWA guy. Like he was brought up in that, you know.
Or Flair.
Yeah. Of course, Flair. Guys like that, guys who have NWA, that made sense for them to be in WCW. But guys like Rick Rude, who blew up in WWF, why was he there? Pay dispute. Jake Roberts, why was he there? Pay dispute. It was the only reason anybody was in WCW if they didn't come up in the NWA was because...
Money.
Because of money. It was because... Or Vince pissed them off in some way. So it was weird. Like, again, also, so we start the show with Schiavone and Bruno Sammartino.
Yeah, that was surprising.
That was weird. Like, why was Bruno there? He was like the most WWF champion ever.
Yeah, but didn't WWF and Bruno have a falling out of some sort?
Yeah,
which is why he didn't go to the Hall of Fame
exactly until way later. So again,
or something like that.
Again, why was Bruno in WCW? Because he's pissed off at the WWF for some reason, probably about money. The show did have amazing opening graphics.
It was fantastic.
Anytime there is like an early 3D render, like these days, that wouldn't even be your first 3D render. Like that's what you would be working with. that'd be your work render.
It's pretty much like how you storyboard the actual thing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Of a haunted house. There was a 3D rendering of a haunted house. The camera and you know what's funny is that the camera took a really odd path to get to the door of the haunted house. It took a very unnatural path. So somebody's keyframes weren't right.
Yeah.
But it probably took so long to render it out.
They didn't want
to
redo
it. They didn't change it.
No.
They didn't fix it. And then we got ghost versions of all the wrestlers participating. And so that was really well done.
Yeah,
I wonder how long it took that computer to render out that opening graphic. Probably like 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a very long time.
Yes.
So kudos to whoever did that.
Money well spent.
Yeah, definitely money well spent.
So, Tony Schiavone and Bruno opened the show,
and
they explained the rules of spin the wheel, make the deal. So,
it's a great rhyme.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So for the main event,
doesn't really apply.
Half of it does.
Not really. You definitely spin a wheel.
Yeah.
There's no deal involved.
Yeah.
I mean, besides, what's the deal with this match?
That could be it.
Yeah.
So then it'd be spin the wheel. What's the deal? So the main event was Sting versus Jake Roberts.
Yeah.
I guess the motivation for this goes back to August 2nd during a show in Baltimore where Jake attacks Sting. Sting that night was supposed to face Vader for the WCW title.
Uh-huh.
Gets taken out of that match due to the attack by Jake. And then Ron Simmons takes Sting's place and wins the title from Vader.
Okay. Now, first off, I have to mention this. I did, in fact, look up why Jake the Snake was there in WCW. There's kind of an interesting story there. He was promised a spot on the writing staff by Vince. According to Jake, Vince didn't give him that. And in fact, when Pat Patterson was suspended or had to leave because of the sexual harassment allegations thing that he went through, apparently, there was a spot open and Vince didn't fill it out of respect for Pat. And Jake had said, you promised me that you were going to do that. And then he told Vince, if you don't let me out of my contract, he was so pissed off by not being allowed to be on creative, he wanted out of his contract. And he said, if you don't let me out, I'm going to no-show wrestle the next WrestleMania. And so I guess Vince did let him out. He had to not wrestle for 90 days. He showed up in WCW just towards, so he was in a 90-day no-compete clause.
Yeah.
At day 87, Bill Watts replaced the executive who was there before, who was on good terms with Jake. Bill was not. And so Jake ended up with a contract originally at $2.5 million, which was reduced to $200,000 per year.
Wow.
So that's according to Jake. So that's why. And Jake was not there very long at all. He debuted in August. He was gone by, I want to say, December before Starrcade. This was the only pay-per-view he did.
Interesting.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? And they went on the indie circuit. Then in 96, he went back to WWF.
Interesting.
Yep.
Interesting. So the main event was Sting versus Jake.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it was Jake who concocted this idea for mm-hmm. a spin the wheel, make a deal, make the deal.
Yeah.
And I kind of got the sense that he actually made the wheel himself. So it was a giant wheel with a dozen stipulations on it, ranging from a barbed wire match, cage match, a bull rope match, a chain match, and then also something called a coal miner's glove match.
Yeah.
Which I had no idea what that was.
We'll find out about that a little bit later on.
Following that, we had some shots of Cactus Jack training the Barbarian.
This was one of the more interesting aspects of this show because throughout the pay-per-view, we got segments, montages, if you will. Well, really, it was just
a couple shots here and
there. A couple shots here and there of Barbarian training for this match. So one of those training segments involved, for example, him on all fours with three concrete cylinders
or blocks,
thank you, on his back, and then somebody with a sledgehammer.
No, not somebody. Cactus Jack.
Oh, I thought Cactus was over here. Okay, maybe you're right.
I think
right.
At least one of them, it was Cactus Jack. Right.
And they swung the hammer down and broke cement blocks on his back. If that swing was, for whatever reason, off by 2 feet, maybe even 1 foot, paralysis or death. Like, that was a legitimate shot right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not sure how that helps him prepare for Ron Simmons.
I don't either.
Very confusing.
Yes. Also, Tony and Bruno talk about Terry Gordy, who was Steve Williams, Dr. Death Steve Williams' tag team partner, completely no-showed the event. And apparently that really happened.
Apparently that was actually a thing.
Didn't show up.
Yeah.
And that stunning Steve Austin. Was filling in for Terry Gordy as Steve Williams' tag team partner.
Yeah.
And then we cut to Missy Hyatt outside of Rick Rude's locker room, because there's this huge deal about Rick Rude having to, he's supposed to wrestle two matches. He's supposed to defend his United States championship against Nikita Koloff.
Yeah, right.
And then also challenge Masahiro Chono for the NWA world title.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to wrestle two matches.
Yeah, it's very confusing why the booking committee wasn't on the same page here when evidently separate areas of the booking committee decided to schedule Rick Rude. Like, who was in control of the Rick Rude storylines? Why did two separate groups of writers think that they each had domain over a Rick Rude storyline?
I don't know.
Why were there two Rick Rude matches?
Maybe they're just trying to get heel heat on him for not wanting to wrestle twice.
Why would
With Flair
anybody,
gone, they probably want a new top heel.
Yeah.
Rick Rude.
Secondarily, why would 2 years later Yokozuna be okay with wrestling two matches at WrestleMania when he saw clearly he could have gotten Vader to wrestle for him and not even have to forfeit his title?
Yeah, I don't get that either.
That didn't make any sense. What isn't it for Vader besides, I mean, maybe Vader just liked to fight. I don't know why he would want to do that. There was a really, really sad footnote to that Vader match.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I saw your notes.
Yeah.
Hold on a second.
I want to go back really quick to the Barbarian training session because I forgot the first one they showed. Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, he was in a ring.
Yeah.
And wasn't he just getting hit by people?
No. There was five people circling him or around him, and he would run into them power slamming him.
He would run into
them. They would body slam him. He would get up and he'd feed into somebody else.
Yes. So he was not practicing offense. He was practicing bumps.
It seemed like he was practicing wrestling against five Ron Simmons.
Anyway. Oh, they did mention this. They were trying to. Was it this match? Oh, sorry. No, it was a different match where Rude. I think they mentioned that both Rude and Masahiro Chono were trying to come up with strategies to counter their opponent's finishers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, that's totally normal.
Yeah.
Running into five different wrestlers.
Well, I was thinking maybe the Barbarian was trying to prepare his body for Ron Simmons' power slam.
I think that's the point.
I think that's why, but they didn't really explain it.
I'm just saying, like, what are the chances he's going to get power slammed and then be a power slammed four subsequent times within a minute? I don't think very likely. Missy Hyatt had a fancy little gold outfit on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we were introduced to JR and Jesse Ventura.
Yeah.
On commentary.
Jesse was wore his Halloween costume for the whole show.
Jesse was great.
He was.
His Halloween costume was simply a black WCW logo shirt and a cape.
Yeah.
Was he supposed to be a vampire?
Well, he had a mask on when they cut to him.
Oh, it was
took the mask off.
What was the mask?
I don't remember.
It was like it wasn't a Scream mask,
but it was
that
like
wasn't a
thing
at the time. It was kind of a Scream-ish mask.
Yeah. So they introduced the show, and then we get our first match, which was Arn Anderson.
This is great.
Michael P.S. Hayes.
Oh, my favorite.
And beautiful Bobby Eaton.
Versus?
The Z-Man, Tom Zenk. Johnny Gunn.
No relation to the Smoking Guns.
No. And the future franchise, Shane Douglas.
I love Shane Douglas, who was only 2 years removed from throwing down the NWA World
title.
Yeah,
that happened 2 years later.
And declaring allegiance to ECW. Interestingly enough, Johnny Gunn, like I said, not related to Bart or Billy Gunn.
No.
Who I don't think are related to each other.
No.
I had to look this up. I had to look up who Johnny Gunn was because, it's not the best quality video that they have. And I was like, is that Bart Gunn? Because I didn't know.
Yeah.
I was like, maybe he just... And so I looked, no, it's not. He also wrestled under the name Salvatore Sincere, something like that. But then, apparently, he made the rounds as the Patriot without permission from the actual Patriot in doing that. And apparently got sued by actual Patriot.
Yeah.
So probably not. There is a thing called gimmick infringement.
Yes.
Johnny Gunn.
Johnny Gunn had a pretty great mullet.
It was a beautiful mullet. Absolutely.
It was pretty fantastic.
Michael Hayes was still the most over dude here.
Oh, the entire team of veterans were insanely over.
Arn Anderson was revving
granted,
that crowd up.
I know it's Philadelphia, but it was like an audience of smart marks in 1992 Philadelphia.
Yeah.
It felt that way.
It totally was.
Remember the guy who used to always sit front row at ECW shows with the hat? He was sitting front row.
That could be. That would not be surprising at all. Michael Hayes looked great, though. Here's the thing about Michael Hayes, too. Is that no matter how big his gut got, he didn't ever think that.
That's true.
Because his face, Michael Hayes, regardless of the outcome of the match, always had win face on. He came out there as if he was still with the Freebirds. He came out there not even knowing that anybody was behind him.
They all walked out to Bad Street, USA.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And he got his name was called last. It was great. What an amazing team.
But, Michael Hayes was getting a little thick through the midsection.
Oh, yeah, but I think it just powered him.
You think so? Because
he was great. He was fantastic. He was still just all about Michael Hayes. Yeah, I mean, the match was what it was. The crowd was actually hot for this match.
And they were firmly behind the veteran team.
I mean, why wouldn't you be? You have Arn Anderson and Michael Hayes. You have the Freebirds and the Horsemen together. And then Eaton was Midnight Express?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Now I know the difference between Midnight Express and Rock and Roll Express because I've seen the Rock and Roll Express.
Always remember Midnight Express was managed by Jim Cornette.
Jim Cornette never managed the Rock and Roll Express?
I don't believe so.
He had to have. He inducted them.
Because
Epic rivalry.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting.
I believe Midnight Express was, at least for the most part, Bobby Eaton and Stan Lane.
The best line out of this entire match was Jesse Ventura. This is great. One thing I don't like about Shane Douglas, JR, he looks like one of those right-wing Republicans.
Whoa!
Jesse, do you not know who your audience is? I get that you're working heel, but that's cutting to the bone for a lot of people, man. Oh, man. People hated Clinton back then. Wait, this was...
No, this is before the election.
Just before the campaign season was firmly going on. George Bush probably falling in the polls. It might have been an inevitability at that point.
Could be.
He looks like one of those right-wing Republicans. Oh, man, Jesse. Call it how it is, Jesse. I wonder how Shane Douglas felt about that. Maybe you know, people didn't like Shane Douglas. Maybe they had some political debates backstage with Shane Douglas, him and Jesse Ventura.
I have no idea.
Hey, Shane, who are you voting for next week? Ha, ha, ha. George Bush.
Well,
you're an idiot.
Wasn't Ross Perot a candidate in that election, too?
Mm-hmm, he was, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they said that he might have spoiled things for George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness.
There's a couple other spots where the crowd was firmly behind the veteran team. There's a spot where Bobby Eaton clips Shane Douglas, hits him from behind at the knee.
Yeah.
Crowd pops.
Crowd goes crazy.
But the veteran team does not pick up the win.
No, they didn't. The heel team
Because Johnny Gunn pins Michael Hayes following a Luthez press.
This pay-per-view.
And the crowd boos.
This paper. Well, okay. Let me ask you, do you think they were booing because the heels won?
No. The team, Shane Douglas' team, were not the heels.
Okay. Well, to the crowd they were. Do you think the crowd... Any team Shane Douglas is on is heels, man. Come on. You know
not in 1992. He was one of the dynamic dudes.
How, they were not a heel act?
No.
How is that not possible? That, man, they...
Is that what the name? Dynamic dudes?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think. So I know the Hollywood Blondes were Steve. Just dynamic dudes, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Him and Johnny Ace.
Him and Johnny Ace. Who, by the way, always looked like he was 45. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, dynamic dudes.
Or were they booing because Luthez press, albeit it was a forceful Luthez press. This was probably the most intense Luthez press I've ever seen because Austin's, you know, he also popularized the modern day Luthez press.
Yeah.
But it was kind of...
It was a transition move.
It was just a setup to punch you in the face a lot.
Yeah. Whereas Johnny Gunn's Luthez press, he would do the press and he held his opponent's arms down and also wrapped his legs around his opponent's legs so they couldn't use their legs to kick out.
I get the feeling, and I have no idea. I would love to ask Luthez about this, even though I think he's probably dead. He's got to be dead,
I would think so, yeah.
Luthez, he was wrestling in like the freaking 1890s.
Well.
Luthez. But I don't think that he died that long ago. 2002, yeah, it wasn't that long ago. 15 years ago. What was I going to say about the Luthez press? Oh, is that I would think that maybe Luthez came up with that as a shoot finish. Because that you're not going to get out of that if the guy on top of you doesn't want to get... unless you're like Brock Lesnar, you can throw the guy off you. So maybe that was a shoot finish. I don't know. Yeah, it could be. Let's see.
Following that match, a segment with Missy Hyatt outside of Rick Rude's locker room.
Oh, yeah.
Harley Race,
mm-hmm.
The former 7-time NWA World Champion, enters Rick Rude's locker room.
Yeah.
For, I believe, unknown purposes at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Missy is trying to get a scoop.
Yeah,
so she tries to get to the locker room. Doesn't happen.
She makes some sort of comment about, this is the first time I've ever been told not to be in a locker room, Missy. Anyways, back to Tony and Bruno. Bruno sometimes looked like he was sleeping, like when he was standing there, because he's got like little eyes. And so like sometimes like it just looked like he wasn't blinking. He was just like... Maybe you could do the thing where you sleep on your feet.
Could be.
That'd be interesting. I can't even sleep on a plane.
No, I can't either. I can't sleep sitting up.
Yeah, I can't do that. It's impossible.
Next, Brian Pillman versus Ricky Steamboat.
I think it's because my head's big.
Yeah, I have a large head too.
It's too... I can't just do this because like I just want my head wants to tilt one way or the other. I can't get perfect synchronicity. You know what I noticed about Neville during the 205 Live? One eye is decidedly higher on the face than the other.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Next up, we had...
Pillman versus Steamboat.
I thought this was going to be a fantastic match, and it was a decent match.
It was fast-paced.
It was that's what I meant. I thought it was going to be a really fast-paced match, and it was fast. Not as fast. And it ended with like a weird roll-up.
Yeah, the finish saw Steamboat do a sunset flip off the top rope, go for a pinning combination. Pillman reversed it,
yeah.
And then there was like an awkward reversal.
Mm-hmm.
for another roll-up where Steamboat got the pin.
Again. So when did him and Savage have their epic?
WrestleMania 3. So 87.
87. So this is 5 years later. Again, early, like months ago, I looked up Ricky Steamboat. He left WWF because they wouldn't let him. They were mad that he took a week off for the birth of his kid. And then they just started jobbing him out. So that's when he left. Yeah. And when he came back, they gave him that ridiculous dragon outfit. Pillman.
But after Steamboat left, he came to W Steve W and then had those series of matches against Ric Flair.
I love that you just call it W Steve W.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oops. WCW.
Rewinding a bit, though, when Pillman came out, number one, his perm looked a little bit off. It looked a little misshapen.
Oh, I didn't notice
so
that.
So maybe he was taking a nap in the back. I don't know. Because I would think you need to be upright if your perm's going to stay right. Number two, he totally had Lou's face. I don't think Brian Pillman knew. I like, for example, probably a good guy to play poker against. I would think that maybe he doesn't have a... On the other hand, he did that big swerve when he left WCW, but he was acting like he was still under contract with them, but then he went to ECW and then WWF.
Yeah.
That whole weird thing. So maybe he had a great poker face. I don't know. Maybe he just didn't care. I think a lot of people in WCW just didn't care. Anyways, terrible finish. Although, I did note here, the Dragon had that amazing sunset flip.
Yeah,
from the top of the rope, and he'd bend space and time going over him. That was cool.
It was really well done.
Cut to player Teddy Long. That was great.
Yeah,
yeah.
He was interviewing Masahiro Chono.
Mm-hmm. He looked like a stud, man. Yeah. Chono was a freaking stud.
Yeah.
During this interview, they're talking about the weird Rick Rude situation where somebody got to choose.
No, each competitor got to choose a referee.
Each competitor got to choose one referee each, but then WCW chose another two referees.
No.
I thought there were four refs altogether.
No. No, each competitor got to choose a referee, and then Ole Anderson was WCW's head official.
Yeah.
And before the match started, there was a coin flip.
Yeah.
Determined who would be the in-ring ref and who would be the referee outside of the ring.
I thought when they said that, they said which two officials would be on the outside and which two officials would be on the inside.
One.
I'm pretty sure there were four refs for this match, dude.
No.
I should go back and watch it.
I took extensive notes on the match.
Here's the thing good job. I trust you. It's probably both were right, and it's probably like three.
No, minutes. This is a situation where just I'm right.
Okay. Here's what I loved about the contingent from Japan, Chono's guys.
Yeah.
They all look like they knew that place was beneath them. They all had this look on their face like, this is stupid. Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
And another thing that some criticism for Teddy Long, put the mic in the guy's face. Because when he said, what are you thinking right now? He puts it down. He like puts it at his own mouth level. And the guy's up here and he says something. And I'm sure that his English is fine, but you're also overcoming probably a bit of an accent. And on top of that, the mic's all the way over here, so I can't hear what the hell he's saying.
Yeah, he was announcing the selection.
That happened twice.
Yeah, he was announcing the selection of Chono's ref.
Who was like amazing wrestler guy.
Yeah. Kensuke Sasaki.
Sasaki, yeah.
So he would be Chono's selection as referee for the NWA World Title match.
Yeah, if I had to choose my guest referee, and I was like, oh, you chose 103-year-old Harley Race, well, I'm going to choose Shibata over here. You know what I mean? Guess who's keeping that title?
Yep.
This guy.
Following that, back to Tony Schiavone.
Back
this time
to Schiavone, yeah.
With Bill Watts, and Bill Watts announces that Harley Race is going to be Rick Rude's referee.
Yeah. Very weird.
And that Vader will be defending Rick Rude's U.S. title tonight rather than Rick Rude.
Yeah. So then does that make Vader champion?
No. I mean, they said there was some sort of injunction filed in court.
Yeah. Didn't happen. Go ahead.
No. But storyline-wise.
Yeah.
But they didn't expound upon that.
Yeah.
Whether WCW filed a countersuit or anything. They didn't say anything about that.
Yeah.
It just took one injunction. WCW was like, all right, fine, Rick. You don't have to wrestle twice tonight.
So it was Rick Rude filing the injunction or filing a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Which led to an injunction against WCW.
Yeah.
They didn't appeal it.
Yeah. And I don't know if terms of that injunction were that Rick Rude got a name a proxy for his U.S. title match, but that's how it worked out.
That's how it worked
because
out.
Because Rick Rude didn't have to drop the belt. Instead, Vader literally had his proxy in that match.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he gave the belt to Vader. No.
No. Although Vader did pose a lot with it.
Before the match, yeah. He held the belt up, right?
And then even afterwards, during some sort of promo, he still had it.
That's weird.
It was very weird.
Very weird.
Yeah.
And so right after that, we had the match for the U.S. title.
Yeah.
Nikita Koloff versus Vader.
Yeah. Bad idea on Koloff's part to fight this because...
Hold on. Before you continue, I'll mention there was a stipulation that... Medusa was, initially barred from ringside when it was going to be Rick Rude in the match.
Mm-hmm.
But then right before the match, it was announced that Rude and Harley Race, who walked out with Vader, would also be banned from ringside.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense, you know. I mean, yeah. There's all sorts of shenanigans. By the way, Rick Rude was in ridiculous. I mean, I know he's always been, but my God. That man's body was immaculate.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Have you ever heard, did he shave his mustache only to be in non-WWE situations?
I don't think so, because I believe in WCW he did have a mustache at some point. They mentioned the fact during
when he unmasked in 91, remember he was the mysterious masked guy? He had a mustache then.
Yeah. Right. And also they made a point of saying during commentary, either during this match or his match against Chono, that he had shaved his mustache and it seemed recent.
When was Magnum PI canceled? 88, so it was well before this.
Yeah.
So it didn't coordinate with the canceling of Magnum PI. Okay.
No.
Who is this guy in Magnum PI? I don't remember that guy.
Oh, I do.
Do you?
Did he
fly the helicopter? No, I thought he flew the helicopter.
I don't remember.
He didn't fly.
I don't remember his role in the show. I remember the guy though. So it was during this match that we learned that tossing someone over the top rope leads to a disqualification. Didn't play until the end of the match.
No, but it's good that we knew that.
So as late as 1992 in WCW, if you threw someone over the top rope, instant disqualification.
Boom, you're done. I wonder when that ended.
I don't know
either.
And they didn't have mats on the outside of the ring. It was just concrete.
Oh, I was going to mention that too. Do you remember in the rise and fall of WCW, Bill Watts? That was his thing. He said, no, I came in there and I wanted to get some more realism. So I got rid of the mats. And then it cuts to like three different wrestlers saying, this idiot got rid of the mats. It doesn't help anything. It looks horrible. It looks terrible. I mean, this is coming from the guy who put brick floor, but that's as a joke in WCW. It looks terrible. It looks terrifying.
Yeah.
Harley Race had to take a bump down on the floor. And you're not going to have mats there? Like, this isn't... We don't want this to be real. We don't want people cracking their heads on the concrete.
I know.
What year did X-Pac crack his head on the concrete?
I want to say 93 or 94.
I want to say 93, yeah. And then what year did he rip his butthole?
Much later. But then also, when they did put the mats down, there was that spot where with Vader and Foley where they pulled the mat back and then Vader powerbombed Foley into the concrete.
Yeah.
And Foley got like a severe concussion and lost memory for a while.
Oh, God.
Anyways, Vader won this match with a Vader bomb.
Mm-hmm.
His Vader bomb wasn't terribly graceful.
No, it wasn't.
It looked like it legit hurt.
Yeah,
and he has legit hurt people with it.
No, in fact, Nikita Koloff, this was his last match. He, according to Wikipedia anyways, he suffered a herniated disc in his neck off of a clothesline from Vader. We knew those were stiff.
Yeah.
This, I don't know if you can really blame this on Vader, but he also got a hernia trying to slam Vader. So that's when your guts goes into your balls.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sucks. But yeah, the herniated disc in his neck, I think that probably...
That's the one that probably
retired him. Yeah. That sucks. That sucks. And I didn't really look. I didn't like go back. It was like mid-match that I looked it up or that I happened to read it. So I didn't really look at the actual spot.
He wrestled for a while with both those injuries then. Because the body slam came maybe within the first two-thirds of the match.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Eesh, my goodness. Oh, God. Can you imagine wrestling? I've never had a hernia. I can just imagine what it feels like. Probably doesn't feel good.
I would imagine, no.
Yeah. Anyways. There was a great advertisement for the upcoming pay-per-view, Starrcade Battle Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
It was like their version. I think they were trying to ape the Royal Rumble at that point.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, because it was like every man for himself, and it showed a bunch of people getting thrown over the top rope. So either everybody was going for DQs or it was some sort of
everybody was going for DQs. I looked up the card last night when they mentioned it.
Oh, it was a tournament.
Well, it's kind of a lot of things. There's a Lethal Lottery tag team thing.
Oh, maybe my that's
a tournament.
Gosh.
No, because there's a King of Cable tournament. And then there's Battle Bowl 2, which had...
Not just King of TBS, King of all of cable.
8 participants in Battle Bowl 2.
Wait, if it's a King of cable, why would they be on... Well, pay-per-view, I guess, is cable.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things going on. A
couple Lethal Lottery tag matches, huh? Oh, that's when they just randomly pair people up together, I think.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So what's Battle Bowl? There's only 8 people in the match.
Only one man can survive the battle.
Oh, it is a battle royal.
Yeah, okay. So it's their... Oh, all those guys. Battle. Yeah. Oh, it's the second. That was the second Battle Bowl. Interesting.
Yeah, there was a first.
Wow. And the great Muta won it. Sting beat Big Van Vader.
To be the King of Cable.
Is that... When did that... Like, when did his reign as King of Cable end?
Let's find out.
Was there a King of Cable 2?
Oh, man.
Oh, whoa.
We got to watch that one.
Jesse Ventura Strongest Arms Arm Wrestling Tournament 1992.
Wow.
What was that at? Was that its own pay-per-view?
We have to look into that.
Oh, definitely. That sounds fantastic.
All right, let's continue.
Great tournaments. Anyways, next up we got a... was this one the promo with Dr. Death and Austin? Where am I here? Yeah, this was cool. Dr. Death was not a pretty looking man. He was kind of an ugly brute looking guy, but he delivered like it was the most pro wrestling promo, screaming, pointing, probably a let me tell you something or at the end of the day.
Yeah.
We're both probably part of this. And then he said, Steve, how do you feel about this? And then Austin said, like, again, the mic. He didn't talk into the mic, so I have no idea what he said. I wanted to say, what?
Anyway. Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah. Steve, how are you feeling about this? Anyways.
After that, Missy Hyatt interviews Dustin Rhodes and Barry Windham.
Goldust was a baby. That face was the most babyest face ever. It was baby. He was such a kid, man. God, what was he, like 20 years old?
Probably. Pretty young, yeah.
Pretty young. Barry Windham. He gave the most Barry Windham promo ever. Apparently, it's funny because I remember Meltzer talking about Barry Windham. And he said, yeah. And he mentioned how big of a star Barry Windham was at one point.
Yeah.
But he said, and I forget when it was, but he mentioned that he had been a star in a very, very specific, very short window of time.
Was that when you won the NWA title?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I want to say it was around 89. They're like, oh, yeah, 89. In like, you know, the third week of October 89, he was massive.
Top star in the entire industry.
Top star.
But, you know, watching next was the match, Dr. Death and Steve Austin against Dustin Rhodes. 30-minute
long match.
And Barry Windham.
Yeah.
Barry Windham, for a guy his size, he's only 6'7".
Yeah.
He moved really well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was pretty athletic.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if he was the kind of guy who was... Because I think he was the guy that Scott Hall was talking about in AWA when... God, what was the story? It was some anecdote about how Barry was like... He threatened to walk out on Vern, goes in there and like gets his last paycheck, or Vern fired him or something. And then Scott Hall saw the paycheck and it was like huge. And Barry Windham was just like, you know, like whatever, just another paycheck.
That sounds right.
Something like that, but I think it was Barry. Anyways, what an interesting character.
So yeah, this match...
That was a terrible story, I'm sorry.
A 30-minute time limit, and we got all 30 minutes of it.
I did not understand a lick of this. So there was a ref bump.
Well, here, let's go. I mean, like the first 25 minutes of this match are just kind of whatever. It's the only anything really happened the last 5 minutes of it.
Okay.
So... there was a moment where the ref was distracted and Dustin Rhodes sent... he was sent over the top rope.
Goldust over the top rope. While the ref was distracted.
And then following that, ref bump.
Okay.
Ref's out.
Okay.
So with 2 minutes left in the match,
Nick
Patrick, longtime WCW referee.
Oh, yeah. NWO referee.
Yes.
Yeah.
Comes in, counts the pinfall. I believe Austin had Windham in a roll-up.
And
the problem was Windham was not the legal man.
He wasn't, but then Dr. Death like gave him like the weakest-looking clothesline while on the ground. It was sort of like a fall-over clothesline.
Yeah.
But Austin got the pinfall on, you said it was...
Windham. But he wasn't the legal man.
But he wasn't the legal man.
So the first ref gets back in the ring and says, no, not the legal man, doesn't count. And so there's a maybe one or two more pinfall attempts by Austin and Williams, maybe. But I kind of feel like the end of this match was booked the opposite of how it should have been. Because I think at least one time Dustin Rhodes tried to pin Austin. But I feel like if you really want to build the drama, you need to have Austin and Williams going for the pinfall.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And in fact, Jesse Ventura even said, that's why I was so confused by this. Because so they were aimed, so was Goldust and Wyndham,
they were champions.
Were they up by a fall, or were they just trying to? So this wasn't like however many falls you can get the time limit.
No,
this was once the draw happens, we're still champions. We're good.
Yes. So you think they just want to milk the clock,
right? But instead, they were going for the pin, and Williams and Austin weren't. They were getting their butts whooped.
Yeah.
And so it should have been the opposite. They should have been furiously trying to get the pin.
Yes.
And even Ventura and JR pointed out, and JR was like, they don't need to, he doesn't need to be doing this right now. Yeah. They just need to wait it out.
Yeah. And then Dustin gave Austin a tombstone with like 30 seconds left.
Oh, yeah.
And then that was the end of the match, pretty much.
Yeah, that was it.
It was weird seeing Stone Cold not wrestle like Stone Cold, like doing drop kicks.
Oh, before Owen messed up his neck. I know.
It was interesting.
Yeah, I know. It is kind of what's interesting about Austin always to me is that the difference between Stone Cold Steve Austin, the megastar, and Stunning Steve Austin, there isn't that huge of a difference, but there is something that simply clicked with Stone Cold. Maybe it was the bald head, maybe it was the goatee, maybe it was the working man gimmick thing, maybe it was the no BS thing.
He even punched differently when he was Stone Cold versus how he did at the show.
That, yeah.
Like just the motion of his punch, you could tell it's Stone Cold still, but it's different.
Yeah.
So much of how he moves and delivers moves were different as Stone Cold versus how they were as Stunning Steve Austin.
Yeah. It's just weird because you don't see, honestly, like when I look at it, I don't see the ingredients to a superstar. I really don't. And then even when you see his promos in ECW, they're very entertaining. But, you know, he comes over as the ringmaster. And it's like just another dude.
Yeah.
He slaps on that goatee, shaves his head, puts on a black leather vest, and starts like, I mean, his thing, you know, that's what Kevin Owens said, is that Austin's advice to him was never stop running your mouth. And that might have been it, because like his promos, once you got past King of the Ring 96, they were just nonstop amazing.
Yeah.
You know? So maybe that was it. Maybe it was just, He found his character in his promos.
Yeah.
And that's what clicked.
I mean, it happens, you know.
It does, yeah.
There are people that will be wrestling for years, and let's find a character that connects with them, and then something clicks, and it takes off.
It's just amazing that he's literally the biggest draw ever, you know, and that's
and you see this WWE history. You see this pay-per-view, and if you didn't know that, you wouldn't think.
Just another dude?
Yeah.
Just another guy. I know, it's always a trip. Then we had Tony Schiavone and hanging out with Vader, who is still carrying the U.S. title.
Yeah, Harley Race was with him, and as was Paul E. Dangerously.
Oh, we forgot to mention. Oh no, wait. That was coming up next. So Medusa shows up. So Paul E. Dangerously, Paul Heyman's cutting this promo, and he starts laying into Medusa, who then shows up.
No, I think she shows up and interrupts.
Okay, all right.
Him, and then he really lays into her.
Oh my gosh. He starts laying into her, talking about, I'm a man, you're a woman. Like, you're stupid. You can't think for yourself. I'm firing you. I brought you in. He literally said, I brought you in to serve whatever needs Rick Rude has. Only because the other hooker wasn't available. Or did he say whore?
No, he said hooker.
He said hooker. Okay. Still bad.
It's real bad.
Yeah, it's real bad. But it's kind of weird because, like, that's really edgy. Like, I mean, I was told it because, man, talk about heel heat. Like, it was like, you hate this guy. And then Medusa finally, like, he fires her.
Well, he fires her and says, you're fired. Jumps up and down and does this.
Dude, he smacks her hard on the arm.
Yeah.
And she lays into him.
She kicks the heck out of his head.
Oh, it was great.
Just a vicious head kick.
Yeah, and then like
she gets on top of him and starts punching him.
They have to be separated, and then he calls her a bitch straight up. I thought that was amazing only because it's kind of like, to me, it's kind of like when Vader and Cactus Jack had their like super violent, bloody, seemingly out of place match in WCW. This felt like ECW. This didn't feel like a WCW promo, but yet it was. And it's like, that's really edgy for a product that's kind of, you know, just seemingly not as glitz and glamoury as the WWF, yeah. you know? Yeah. It was, it felt out of place, but man, it was, I thought it was...
It was pretty intense.
It was pretty intense, and you don't expect that. You know, it was pretty cool. Like, Heyman was still very much Heyman. He was so good. Incidentally, I looked this up too, because they didn't fight at the next Starrcade, but Medusa and him fought at the Clash of Champions the following month. And she won by count out. I don't know. I'm sure it's on the network.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm assuming she got the majority of the offense in.
And I think the Dangerous Alliance disbanded pretty quickly after.
Oh, that could be
this show.
That could be. Yeah.
Because Medusa comes out with Rick Rude, and Rick Rude was the top guy in the mm-hmm. Alliance.
Oh, so. Yeah.
So after that, we go to the stage. Sting comes out.
Oh my God.
And up from the ground comes the wheel.
The wheel.
It is time to spin the wheel.
It has like a weird like skull.
Yeah, with like, flickering lights.
Flickering lights.
And like some snakes at the bottom on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And then when there's a stagehand that brings like the lever.
He runs into the shop.
Yeah, and positions the lever to spin the wheel.
Yeah.
I doubt it's even connected. So Sting pulls the lever.
Let me ask him, how do you think this thing actually spun? Do you think there was a dude behind it?
Yeah.
Just, okay, yeah.
So Sting pulls the lever. Uh-huh. The wheel spins, and there's randomly fireworks come shooting out of the side of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it lands on Coal Miner's glove.
Did the stop seem sudden to you? Or did it feel like a real spin with a natural stop?
I don't know, because I thought I read that they didn't know what the stipulation... Like, yeah, that was a shoot.
Yeah.
That was a shoot.
Yeah.
What the stipulation was going to be. I don't know.
Yeah, it's so weird. Yeah, because there was that one shot, I don't think we mentioned, there was that one shot preceding some of these when they were talking about it, and they show there's a shot backstage somewhere, and it shows all the different gimmicks that could be chosen, and one of them was coal miner's glove. There was a bull rope, a ladder, a bunch of other stuff.
Some barbed wire, steel cage.
But the great thing about it, though, is that when it lands on coal miner glove, Sting looks so confused and mildly disappointed.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I don't even know what to do now.
I have to go back quickly backstage and figure out how to do this match.
Hey, Bill, what is a coal miner's glove match?
But they cut to JR and Jesse, and Jesse says it's a glove with steel on it?
Yeah. He said, well, you know, it's a coal miner's glove. It's a leather glove, you know, with steel on it. And whoever climbs the pole can get it, and they can use it on their opponent one hit, and you're out.
That's pretty much what happened, too.
he called that one.
Although, we'll get to that. We'll get to the main event
when
we get there.
Yeah.
Following that, we had the NWA World Heavyweight title match between Rick Rude and Masahiro Chono.
Correct, with referees Harley Race and...
Well, hold on. I explained a little bit. There is a coin flip.
Yes.
Coin toss.
Okay.
Rick Rude wins the toss. So
you think that was a shoot?
I don't know.
You think they worked a coin toss?
I mean, they just have a coin with, you know, two heads or two tails on it.
Oh, yeah.
So Rude, of course, selects Harley Race to be mm-hmm. the referee in the ring.
Yeah.
And so Sasaki is the ref on the outside of the ring.
Correct, yeah.
As well as Ole Anderson, who is the head official of WCW.
Yeah.
So the kind of the general story of this match is that each competitor is working the other competitor's body part to best use their finisher. With
right.
Rick Rude, it's the Rude Awakening neck breaker, so he's working Chono's head and neck.
Of course.
Chono used the STF,
yeah.
And so he's working Rude's lower back.
By the way, I totally forgot about the Rude Awakening, but my desire for somebody to have a neck breaker as their finish, Rick Rude right there, man. Totally can happen.
Yeah.
He drops that thing like it's a freaking stunner,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
it's great.
He does. So there's one segment after Chono's been working Rude's back for a while
mm-hmm.
where Rude gets to the outside of the ring and Medusa comes up behind him because Rude's like leaning on the apron and she starts massaging his lower back.
They make such a great couple.
Yeah.
I want to see their children. So there was, I mean, there was, you know, Rude and Chono could both work.
Yeah.
So there's some decent stuff going on here.
It's just kind of a slow-paced match.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Chono is, it's kind of interesting. Chono, from like here up, was all stud. But then he had like a little bit of, he had like, he did the thing where he puts his tights over like the little bit of stomach that he had. But I feel like if he just put the tights under, it wouldn't be like hanging over or anything. So I don't know why he would do that. Why did people love the...
I don't know.
I don't know, man. It's weird. I have to ask him.
So this match kind of picked up towards the end. Rude hit a pile driver on Chono. Mm-hmm. Chono gets his foot on the ropes before the three count. Rude kind of hits a top rope drop kick.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but, you know, he lands on his back, sells the lower back injury.
Yeah.
And then Chono accidentally hits Harley Race. We get a ref bump.
Yeah. That,
Harley sent to the outside.
It's like an old school thick old man bump. You always know those because they just sort of like,
yeah,
they sort of roll back.
Yeah.
And it always looks like it doesn't hurt. It's weird. Like their whole body just is in one. Their body doesn't change. Like usually when somebody takes a bump, they throw their arms back.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
They just go like this.
Yeah.
It's like somebody has them tied up to like a stiff plank and they go boom.
And then Chono throws Rick Rude over the top rope, which by WCW rules...
DQ.
Should have been a DQ.
Yeah.
But when he does so, he knocks out both referees.
Yes.
Rude correct. Gets back in the ring, hits a Rude Awakening on Chono.
It looked great, too.
But there's no ref to count the pinfall.
Correct.
Rude gets up, I think investigates a little bit. Chono puts him in the STF. At that point, Sasaki gets in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Because Rude's like banging on the mat,
mm-hmm.
which he did every time he's in a submission move.
Yeah, no.
Every time Rude
it looked like he's
this,
tapping out,
but he wasn't tapping out. I guess. Sorry for banging on the table. And so Sasaki calls for the bell.
Yeah.
And so it seems like Chono won.
Yeah.
But then Harley Race gets back in the ring, reverses the decision, and says that Rude wins by DQ because Chono threw Rude over the top rope.
Yeah.
And then they all brawl.
Then Sasaki starts destroying everything
yes,
in
and
sight.
And he rips off his shirt.
It's fantastic.
It's great.
I was like, I don't know who this ref is, but he's amazing.
Yeah.
Because he like, didn't he like also jack, didn't Harley Race get back in?
Yeah.
And he like.
He punched him.
He punched him and he like threw him out again or
yeah,
something like
he
that.
He suplexed Rick Rude.
Yeah. But no, Harley Race, when he first got thrown out or when he first like went toppling out, like he toppled out and then he toppled down on the concrete. And he's like burly old man guy. So it didn't really look like it affected him, but it couldn't have felt good.
Yeah, I know.
Poor Harley Race. From what I heard, he like stayed in the business like too long, or like longer than he wanted to because he was just always broke. Forget why. Maybe an accident or something. I don't know. Don't take my word for that. Anyway, he's got another barbarian training video. That
yeah, this
awesome.
Is one with the cinder or the
cinder blocks.
Cinder blocks.
That
yeah.
was amazing. Yeah.
Following that was a match between the Barbarian with Cactus Jack against Ron Simmons.
Man, Ron Simmons got a freaking boxer's entrance. He had like a ton of security around him. He had his like his hands in front on the dude in front of him. Teddy Long was coming mm-hmm, out with him. Mm-hmm. It was rad.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah. At no point though did he place concrete bricks on Barbarian's back and take a sledgehammer.
But he did give him a power slam, picked up the win.
Yeah. So evidently, getting power slammed by five other yokels wasn't enough to prevent him from taking that one. Ron Simmons had the best power slam.
Yeah.
Back to Tony and Bruno Sammartino.
And they start talking about WCW's youth movement.
So what better way to really exemplify that than bringing in Eric Watts.
Bill Watts's kid.
Yeah. A.K.A. Black Hole of Charisma. Because this guy looked like he talked and he just like, I need to watch this again. I don't know what he just said. Oh my God, he's so boring. Ron Simmons shows up fresh off getting his victory and, he talks about being happy about winning, I guess. I forget what it was. And then he starts talking about the youth movement. He says, Eric, you're on a good path. Just work hard. That's what I did. Yeah. So good job, Ron. Very uplifting. I would like Ron Simmons of 1992 to be my life coach. He was very inspirational.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then he lost that belt to Vader. Then we had our main event.
Yes.
Let me ask you something. Taking a look at Jake the Snake. How old do you think he was? Just looking at his face.
Mid-30s.
Yeah. He was, he was 38. He was younger than us.
Hmm.
But you wouldn't know that, like, looking at his face, he doesn't look mid-30s. Come on.
No, I mean, I just.
He looks late 40s.
Yeah, maybe.
He looks younger today than he did then. He looks so, I was stunned. I was like, how old is he? And today he's only 61. And I did the math on that. I'm like, he was 38. He was, or 36. He was my age. That's weird. Rick Rude was 34. He looked old.
Yeah, he did.
But Jake looked ancient. He looked so old. But he was like my age.
Yeah.
He was younger than you. That's insane. Anyways, this is a great match. Because both these guys were trying to get to the top of a pole that had to have been 50 feet tall. This pole, like...
It was super tall.
At no point, I think, besides on close-ups of it, at no point could the main camera fit the coal miner's glove into the shot because the damn thing was so tall. And they were pretty far back.
Yeah. I think at one point, Sting is trying to climb the pole. And so he's standing totally straight up, mm-hmm. Upright. And it looked like the pole was two Stings high. So that's about 12 feet.
It was so tall.
But that's 12 feet above the top turnbuckle, which is 4.5, 5 feet tall.
Yeah.
So we're talking maybe a 16, 17 foot high pole.
Man, I'm telling you, I was like, how are they supposed to get up that?
I know.
Like, I noticed there were like notches. Was it climbing notches?
Oh, I didn't notice any notches.
Well, I don't know if there were physical notches. I just noticed that it looked like maybe there was something painted. Maybe I was just tripping. I don't know.
Well, I think it was like, it was a black and white.
Okay, maybe that was
paint on it.
That's,
yeah.
That's what it was then. Okay. I thought they might have been notches.
No, I think it was just.
So you're supposed to do this?
Yeah. That's what Sting did at the finish. So, Sting.
And slide down?
Yeah. Sting works Jake's arm this entire match. There's a spot, since it's a non-sanctioned match.
Yeah.
There's, of course, no disqualification.
Yeah.
So, there's a spot on the outside where Jake runs into the ring post on the outside,
mm-hmm.
which normally is a disqualification in WCW circa 1992.
Running into the ring post?
Getting sent into the ring post.
On the outside?
Yes.
Okay.
But since it was a non-sanctioned match,
God,
disqualification. Why did WCW make wrestling so not fun?
You get rid of the mats, but then everything's a DQ. That doesn't make any sense.
No,
if you get rid of the mats, everything should be no DQ.
Yes. And then there's a spot where Jake undoes his wrist tape and chokes Sting with it.
Oh, good job.
So Sting's strategy made a lot of sense because he was working Jake's arm. You can't climb a 17-foot pole.
Yeah.
With one arm.
That's true.
And I think Jake was just, in general, tried to use every, cheap, dirty, underhanded tactic.
I mean, given
to
how.
Keep Sting down long enough.
Given how we're not sure exactly how.
Because Jake
sturdy
used a chair.
That pole might have been.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure you can climb that thing with two hands, but.
It happened.
Yeah, Sting did it.
So Jake hits a Rainmaker.
Mm hmm. Yeah, yeah.
At one point. Oh, and then man. He hits a DDT.
Yeah.
But then since his arm has been so badly hurt,
couldn't
he can't
get the
climb
the
pole. He tries to climb the pole, but Sting pulls him off.
Yeah.
And there was this great bit where Sting was on. So you're watching. I'm watching the TV. So the pole is on the right side of the frame.
Mm-hmm.
Sting is. The pole is to his right.
Mm-hmm.
He leaps around the turnbuckle
mm-hmm.
to the other side. To hit Jake.
Yeah.
It was a pretty impressive feat of athleticism.
Yeah, yeah. No, Sting was
great. It was so fluid.
Yeah.
At that point, Cactus Jack runs out with a bag. Inside that bag is Jake's snake, which they say was a cobra.
Yeah, they say it was a cobra, and JR even made a point of saying, there is anti-cobra venom.
Several times during the show.
Yeah.
It wasn't,
available.
It wasn't a cobra, though.
No.
So while Jake and Cactus Jack are working their snake situation out, Sting climbs the pole. Gets the glove, hits Jake, I think, in the leg?
Yeah,
or
sounds
on the hip,
right. Yeah.
Somewhere in the lower part of his body. Quickly covers him.
Mm-hmm.
While, and all this time, Jake has a snake in his hand.
Yeah.
And then, so Sting pins him, gets a three count. And this whole time, Jake's like this with a snake on his face, trying to get the snake to bite him. It looked like.
Okay, so.
Because he's like rubbing the snake on his face.
What was his character doing?
Who, Jake?
Yeah.
I think it was supposed to be him trying to keep the snake from biting him, but
yeah.
It's plainly obvious he was trying to get snake tooth into his cheek.
Like, I can appreciate the acting effort that he put through because that has to be a very difficult situation.
But you can literally see him doing
you
this
can
with
see
a snake
he's just
head.
Doing, like, at first he was like, and then it's just he's like,
bite me. Bite me, snake.
On there. At no point is he like this. It's
It was, at first I thought it was, a fake snake or
yeah.
they sedated it or
but
something.
But then you see a close-up
of blood coming out of it.
Fangs are literally in him, and he's like, oh, this is a bad idea.
And there's blood running down his cheek.
Yeah, there's blood running down his cheek. My favorite part was when Sting noticed what was happening and freaks out and like backs up against the ropes. He's like, this is screwed up. This is really dark now. This is not good. This got weird quick. What, like, ooh, that's
so
no good.
Yeah, so Cactus Jack helps Jake out of the ring, and Jake's, like, crawling up the entryway.
And Foley's like, somebody help him! Yeah. Somebody help him! But then Jake reaches out for Foley, and he's like, he backs up. Yeah, he's like, I don't want any part of that snake.
So they make their way back behind the curtain, and they cut back to the ring, and Sting's just kind of like,
yeah,
all right, well.
Another win for the Stinger.
Yeah.
Nice.
Got that match out of the way.
Well, good looking glove here.
I know.
I wonder if they're the opposite one is backstage so I can do some coal mining later.
So rather than end the show right there, they go back to Tony and Bruno.
Yeah.
They give their recap.
Yeah.
But the show still doesn't end.
No, it doesn't.
It goes back to Jim Ross and Jesse.
For a proper sign-off.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. They can recap what we just lived through. I loved it, man. I thought it was bizarre. It was confusing. Oh, I also looked up Rick Rude, why he ended up in WCW. And it was kind of a pay dispute a little bit. Apparently, he had been injured in WWF, but they were still advertising him for like a post-slate of SummerSlam shows or something. And he got mad because he wasn't being compensated for being advertised on those shows, even though they knew that he wasn't going to be there because of the injury. And he was like, well, if you're using me to sell these, then I got to be worth something, so I want some money for that.
Yeah.
And they said no, and he left. That was according to some thread on Reddit. I don't know if it's true or not, but that's what they said. So, yeah, anyways.
So what are we going to do for the next one of these? Let's decide that now. So
let's do that now so we can watch it on the weekend.
You suggested an ECW pay-per-view.
Best ECW pay-per-view. I want to know what the best one was. Wrestling forum. I like forums. I'll go to forums. Somebody please give me a list. Many consider Heatwave 98 great.
Heatwave 98.
Heatwave 98.
Let me look at that.
Okay. Well, let's do Heatwave 98. Wait, what did I say? Heatwave or Hardcore?
You want to do Barely Legal 97?
Barely Legal 97. That sounds good.
Taz and Sabu.
Ooh. Look at that VCR.
Terry Funk versus Raven.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah. This is Terry Funk heavy.
Oh, and before that, it was Funk versus Sandman versus Stevie Richards.
Oh, beautiful.
RVD versus Lance Storm.
Oh, yeah. That's good. That's good.
All right. Barely Legal 97 it is.
All right. Our next pay-per-view is going to be ECW's Barely Legal 1997. Perfect.
Yes.
All right. Good. Anyways, let us know your thoughts in the comments about all that. And until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.